This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
All right, so I want to start off this episode first by saying congratulations to my special guest for getting her, not getting, but like completing her college
bachelor's
career degree. Yeah, I don't know if it, I wouldn't say career because you're probably not done considering you might go to grad school at some point.
I don't know. I'm leaving that open because I just graduated yesterday. I don't want to think about it yet.
Yeah, but congratulations.
Thank you.
We're all so very proud of you.
Thank you. She
graduated with her bachelor's in sociology and in English literature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, so we're very different in that sense. Actually, we're different, but if you really think about it, we're very similar because I studied in a creative field, which was art. You did English.
Yeah, mainly then, for creative reasons, honestly.
Exactly. And then, but we both went into the
social behavioral sciences.
Yeah. So I did political science and you did sociology. So technically, we did almost the same thing, but in different ways.
Research.
We both did qualitative research.
Yeah, qualitative. That's my favorite.
With the Yemeni community.
Yep.
Are you low-key trying to be
Yemeni?
Me?
So that's what everyone already probably thinks that because they're just like, oh, Mini knew it. And I'm just like, please. Don't make me hurt myself.
If anything, I feel like, oh, I want to be like you when I grow up. First of all, you're so popular on Twitter. I don't understand how that happens. Can you, like, send some of that my way? I feel like my page doesn't get a lot of love.
I'll just promote. I'll be like, well, you know what? After this episode, I'll tell everyone, hey, go listen to this episode.
And that's going to be the tweet that no one likes or retweets.
Probably not, because honestly, but hey, that Ramadan tweet, though, the one about, okay, you guys, Ramadan is going to happen twice in the year 2030.
It's really cool. It's interesting when we're talking about. But you also have to understand that the reason I didn't get it when you initially, you know, was bringing up the idea was because I was hungry. It was like right before we broke our fast.
Oh, yeah, you were breaking your fast. I'll give you that pass, you know, but. Okay, that's why I literally touched
it, but I was trying to understand if it was because it was going through a December, January, like it was going between 2 years, but literally happening within the same 30 days.
No.
But no, I realize now that it's happening in 2030 at the beginning of the year and then again at the end of the year. So, ladies and gentlemen, 2030, save your Ramadan 2030 banners because you can use it twice that year.
But then my brother Hamza, he was just like, I'll just get one that says Ramadan Mubarak and that's it.
Which is probably what all of them say. I actually doubt that they put some type of year on it. But yeah, that was actually a very interesting fact. And I don't think anyone's noticed that before.
Yeah, because I thought about it. I'm like, okay, it moves back. And I'm like, we're going to get, you know, into the spring, and then eventually it's going to hit winter, and then I'm like, wait, it's going to be January. And then when it goes back, it's going to be December, but it's going to be December of that same year, because we're moving backwards.
I'm just excited to finally be able to take part in the holiday festivities like everyone else.
And also be, what is it, victims to capitalism and the market.
We already are. You're saying that we're not. Party City had all the Ramadan decorations, which you made me go buy.
I did not. Yasmin did.
Yeah, well, why do you think we have the one that I brought?
Yeah, I said buy me one while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's cute that we need to update it.
It is cute.
We're taking photos with my dad there we try to every day.
Okay, we fail because currently it says Ramadan. No, it says 17 days till Eid. We're in the last 10 days. I know, because we don't update it.
Well, I was going like finals and graduation. Really, what was your excuse?
I was fasting and I work full time. Plus, I manage a podcast and many other things, as you know. Anyways, I didn't bring you on here to attack me. So
she's listing
like,
her resume.
I feel like we get overly excited when Ramadan starts and we have all these ambitions and like this whole. Wait, side note. Someone put a comment in one of my posts. Saying how it was the episode that I did with a young Muslim, and she made a comment about how I guess something about like I sounded unintelligent because I used like and a lot. So I'm gonna be cautious.
Let's talk about that. Remember how we talked about it the other day?
Yeah, about using certain words.
Yeah.
First, but I'm talking about, like, just me saying, like, an So I actually edit that out. But that episode, I was just like, you know, I'm not gonna overwork myself and edit all these little...
Don't bother editing out of this episode. I'm gonna say, like, a lot. But you know what? I got my degree in English literature.
So
it's actually, it's like, I'm pretty sure it's probably a type of code switching. Well, maybe not code switching exactly, but you know.
Okay, can you explain what code switching is, Ms. Sociologist, sociolinguistic?
Code switching is basically if you speak in a certain type of slang or dialect and you're able to kind of, at least from what I understand. So basically, code switching is where if you have a certain dialect or something, or you have certain, like, set of slang words that you use, but you're able to, depending on what setting you're in, you're able to change between that. So, for example, I know me and my friends that are also Yemeni, a lot of us are able to switch into Yemeni, like, slang, and then also, like, accents, too. Like, we'll imitate, like, our parents' accents, and we're able to do that. Similarly, I'm trying to think. I feel like with the internet now, a lot of people are able to use, like, slang from different parts of the world. So, like, people in the UK will use slang that's, like,
banter Southern.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then we'll use slang from the UK, like, banter in it. It sounds ugly when we say it, but, you know, I mean.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Arguably, like, that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically being able to switch between either or. So a lot of people think, like, oh, you sound unintelligent if you speak a certain way. Well, actually, if you're able to move from that to something else,
it means you're more intelligent because your mind is able to make that switch really fast.
Yeah, or just, you know, just be, you just know more.
Yeah.
So if you're, like, able to, you're able to understand what they're saying. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But anyways, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I'm like, doing qualitative research, do you think that makes you feel, like, be a better speaker or a bit more comfortable with, like, your voice? Especially, like, now that you do a podcast, you obviously have to, like, get used to your voice and be comfortable with it. But do you feel like part of doing that qualitative research, because at least for me, doing qualitative research, because I just got out of it, and I'm actually hopefully going to extend it, but doing it for, like, months, it's helped me get used to, like, just speaking and listening to my own voice, because I have to literally replay it all the time.
I mean, almost 3 years of doing this, it's, every time I edit, there's something else that I learn about myself and things that I pick up, and it's not just that, but also listening to people and listening to podcasts, and you listen to people's, like, there's, like, a cadence, like, a tone, the way that people, like, you have to have, I feel like, a specific tone or rhythm, because if you're, like, monotone, no one's going to want to listen to you, you know? Yeah. So you have to have some kind of beat, and it could be, you know, your own style. But anyways, okay, going back to the Ramadan thing, because I think this is something interesting that we can talk about. By the way, we have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about. We're just going to talk.
Oh, yeah, we don't. Oh, yeah.
Because this is how it is all the time at our house.
Our best conversations come from this. And then we're like, we should do a podcast, you know, episode on this. And then we don't.
No, but I feel like we go into Ramadan and it's, in, you know, tonight's the last 10 days. So inshallah, we'll be going to Salat al-Qiyam tonight. But at least for me, and I guess I want to start off with a little bit about how Ramadan has been. And from my experience and what I'm seeing from speaking to my friends and just seeing people online talking about their experience is we really are excited for Ramadan to come, right? Because we all have something that we want to change about ourselves, mm-hmm. and we feel like this is the perfect opportunity for us to finally do it. It's like a reason to do it. And sometimes we're a little overzealous and we're like really excited and ambitious and we have all these things in like the first couple of days we're in it, and then it like...
I feel like people go through a slump, too.
You go through a slump, and then you start feeling guilty because for whatever reason, I think we assume that everyone else is just on a spiritual high, and mm-hmm. we don't recognize that it has its ups and downs. And one of my favorite people, Huda from Yes, I'm Hot in This, who I've done a previous episode with, she's doing this whole series of her comics, and a lot of them are just really great social commentary pieces that really touch on the experiences that people go through during Ramadan. And that's like, you know, okay, you know, you're not far enough in the Quran in where you want to be, or you're not spiritually there. Like, some people, it's just like you just don't feel it. And I think all mm-hmm. of that stuff is okay. But the problem is no one ever really shares that. So
people feel guilty then.
Exactly. You feel guilty. Like, I had this whole setup, and I mean, I still do it, you know, pretty well. but it's not the way that I expected, because real life hits you. And then when you're fasting, you're maybe not as energetic to like write or do certain things, and you just kind of lay there, or you're keeping yourself busy so you're not focused on the fact that you're hungry. And then when you break your fast, you're just like done.
Yeah, like I remember for me, I mean, yeah, I think definitely a lot of people go through like that Ramadan slump where they just, they like how you said, they feel guilty, because it's like, if you think about it, Ramadan is so short. It's, you know, your one opportunity, because you don't know if you're going to have this opportunity again.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you want to take full advantage, but then if you're just not feeling it, or if you just can't get yourself to do it, and especially because a lot of us were tired, we can be sleep deprived, we can be, you know, dehydrated, you know what I mean? A lot of these things, like, it's hard to take care of yourself. Also, and there is that self-care aspect that I feel like is being promoted with Ramadan, as it should be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's hard to maintain, so I think a lot of people, they do feel guilty.
Yeah.
If they can do that.
I think, too, for me, like, in the beginning, I don't know, something about being hungry and dehydrated and just being very weak physically made me very weak emotionally, too. Like, the first, like, week was just really, really, like, taxing on me. Like, it was, I don't know if you noticed, but I was just, like, super low energy. I was just not, I don't know. I felt very down. Mm-hmm. And I think I shared something about it, like, on the podcast. I called it, like, Ramadan blues. But I think that that's also just interesting. Something about that experience of being weak physically, and I don't know. I can't explain it, but it just, it put my emotional state on a different level. Mind you, I was also, like, pre-PMSing, so I think that also has to do something with it. But it was just, like, a really interesting time. And so I was just really keeping to myself, and yeah, it was really weird. Like, I don't really feel like that now, but I definitely felt it in the beginning. And I was like, whoa, this is not what I was expecting in the beginning of Ramadan.
Yeah. I know for me, this was my first year, and possibly my last, of doing finals with Ramadan.
Oh, yeah, that must have been hard.
That was really, really difficult. Well, yeah, so for me, like, the first 2 days of Ramadan, it hasn't hit, like, finals yet. And things were pretty, like, okay, like, in terms of, like, what was going on in school. So for me, things were kind of calm. Work was, like, starting to calm down, because I also worked on campus, and it was all good to go. So, like, for me, I really took advantage of the first few days, and I remember, like, I really made sure to take advantage and, like, read Quran, and, like, read a lot of Quran, read a lot of, like, you know, Islamic books. Just, like, I remember, like, right after Fajr, I would stay for, like, a whole entire hour or, like, two, because I would just stay up until, like, work or, like, school at 7. And I would just stay up, and then I would just, like, be reading and, like, making dua and all this stuff. And I still do that, but I feel like it's been definitely a lot less. And for me, with finals going on, it was just a lot more difficult to maintain it. I remember I would get, like, a lot of stress and anxiety over my, like, what was going on in terms of school, in terms of, like, deadlines. And, you know, there's this one exam, which I knew I failed. I don't know what she ended up grading me, but my final grade was a B, so alhamdulillah, I'm fine with that. But I was literally so done at this point. I was like, as long as I pass enough to, obviously, like, pass the semester, which usually I aim for, like, A's or maybe a B if it's, like, a really difficult class. This time I was like, if I get a C in this class, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just really stressful.
And then graduation, too, right? Because there's a lot of prep that goes into that.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, by the way, I really, and no offense, but I hate graduations. I've never liked them. I didn't walk in my own graduation. I only walked when I did my master's, because it was a smaller, more intimate ceremony, and because my dad wanted me to. Like, I did it for my parents, but they're just so long, and you're literally waiting for a moment. It was not only the biggest one, but you were not where we thought you were going to be, because the school switched and you walked with English and not sociology. And
I wish I walked with sociology. That's one of my regrets. I'm like, the only reason why I walked with English is because some of my closest friends are in English. But
which, she got the outstanding student for sociology, and she didn't walk with that department.
I know. Oh my God. You could have
held the sign. Yeah, but, I mean, Ramadan, now at the last 10 days, I feel like those really always feel like it feels like Ramadan, because mm-hmm. you're just going to the masjid in the middle of the night, and it's always more peaceful than it is in Taraweeh, because Taraweeh is just packed with everyone and kids, and at this point, at like 2-3 a.m. in the morning, kids are asleep,
if they're except for the 27th night.
Yeah, then that's
where it's like everyone shows up.
Yeah, but it's still somewhat quiet. It's just more people. But yeah, I do prefer that.
I feel like that's a good point to like also revive things. You know what I mean? Like, it's really good. Like when you go through that slump.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This like, is a good time where it's like, okay, this is like, the last
I need to pick stuff up and like really be advantageous with this time because it's going by really fast.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, let's have vegan community. Let's all attack Nora right now.
Probably none that listen to my podcast.
No, wasn't it last time? Didn't you say how someone said something rude on our episode because you talked about veganism?
What did they say?
I don't know. Oh, or they said something kind of weird. It was like,
I think I got feedback about like saying like Islamic context and stuff like that, but I don't know if it was anything weird. But okay, so here's why I ate salmon. That's all I ate. It was wild caught salmon that I bought from Sam's Club because when I went to the Middle East a few months ago, or actually like half a year ago, I wasn't eating properly, and if I don't eat properly and I don't eat enough protein, I have hair loss issues. And so I've been seeing a specialist, a doctor, for those issues for about a year, and she's been very incredible. I'm actually thinking of bringing her on a podcast and like discussing kind of what my treatment was like and how I got my results. And because she specifically focuses obviously like on the individual, but she has a lot of hijabi clients and they come from like the Middle East and stuff. She's based off in LA. And obviously she can't, like, unless you can go to her, which I go to her weekly every Saturday, you know, you can't get her services. And it's pretty incredible what she does. And a lot of it is very holistic. And anyways, so she's been on my case since the first day I went there, because she did like this full exam. And she basically told me, being a vegan is great and healthy, but hair is made of protein and you're going to need to eat more protein than like the normal person. So I thought I could supplement it with plant-based protein. And although I was doing an okay job at it, it wasn't until I went to the Middle East and with the change of the environment, I was losing a lot of hair. Stress-related, my scalp was inflamed, and then just my food was really bad. Like there wasn't a lot of food options for me, especially like for lunch and dinner. And so that all had some type of effect on it. And so when I came back, I was really unhappy with that experience. And so, I made that choice to eat eggs when I was there because it was the only option that I had in terms of upping my protein intake. And I was not going to eat any type of animal. I didn't want to at that point.
Yeah, I can never honestly go back to fish. I can see eggs. I can see. I can't see dairy. That just
dairy is disgusting to me. And I love almond milk and oat milk.
Or
beef? No, because I love cows.
Beef is gross. Sorry, like
I have no appetite for any other meat. Like halas, like, it's just
go or like.
No. I never really liked that stuff from before anyway. It was mainly chicken and fish. But so that helped actually a lot, and my treatment did even better than it was before I traveled. And then I realized, okay, well, I'm not going to keep eating eggs all the time because there's only so much eggs that you can eat. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, so I'll take the next step. And the next step was fish, and it was going to either be like shellfish or salmon. And I've always loved salmon. So, I mean, I've only had it once since I bought it, and I bought it in the beginning of Ramadan. But it was interesting because the day that I made it, I feel like my parents were so happy, and they were like looking at me as I'm sitting there like about to start eating it. Like they couldn't believe I was actually going to have fish because they think it's the strangest thing that you and I don't eat meat and haven't for 3 years. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the decision. I've had great results with my my hair. I think hijabis in general suffer from different types of hair issues, and it's something that I've had a lot of conversations about on my podcast page.
Yeah.
Because I've put it up before, and a lot of girls are saying how hijab has either messed up like their texture, or it's caused them hair lice or hair lice. Hair loss.
Whoa.
Not hair lice.
Actually, it probably prevents hair lice.
Yeah, it probably prevents it. And then just also like a receding hairline, because those caps that you wear under the hijab are really not good for you.
But see, okay, here's the other issue.
Hannah.
Well, okay, I stopped wearing them. Here's the thing. Now I only wear them when I wear chiffon hijabs.
Because you kind of need
it. Yeah, I need it. But if I'm not wearing, if I'm wearing those crinkle or cotton hijabs, I stopped wearing them. But the issue is, though, is that your hijab keeps slipping off sometimes. And, like, I'll tuck it in and, like, I'll fix it. But sometimes I don't. So I'm just putting this out there. It's a struggle, just in general.
Cover your hair.
Yeah. And then, you know, everyone's like, you have a hair showing. And, like, that's fine if, like, you point it out, like, kindly. But then there's some people where they're just like, don't be one of those girls. And I'm just like.
Yeah. Well, so it's funny because one of my friends on Instagram, she just mentioned about, there was like a picture she posted of herself and her hijab was like lopsided. And she said, I still don't know how to keep it like stay put. She was like asking for advice if any girls like have any recommendations. And I messaged her and I said, you know, when I hairspray my hair down, when I brush it back, like it'll still slide around, but it doesn't give you that like push of the hairs where they start coming out of the side of your head, you know? And it starts feeling really uncomfortable as well when it starts, your hair starts shifting, especially if you have really soft hair. Like, my hair is really soft and it does that and it's so annoying. So I hairspray it, but the only thing is you have to wash your hair then every night, which I know most people say that they don't do that because they think it's not as good. But my doctor actually recommended that I wash my hair every night. I wash my hair every single night. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you see my hair. My hair has become incredibly soft and healthy because I have to cleanse my scalp because I have such a sensitive scalp, so I wash my hair every day.
I mean, how do, like, just think about how non-hijabis do it, because I'm pretty sure a lot of them, it looks like they style their hair every day, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think it's more for convenience and so that, like, it doesn't dry out their hair, especially if it's treated hair. If you have hair, it's going to be dry, so if you wash it all the time, you lose those natural oils that are making your hair soft. But I think that if you're are eating healthy and you're not doing a lot to your hair in terms of heat and color and chemicals, then you don't need to wash your hair every day. I mean, you wouldn't need to skip days to wash your hair because it would never be dry.
Well, you could wash it every day. But with hairspray, you put it on, that's already chemicals. You know what I mean? Like, whenever I put on hairspray, I'm like, ooh, I really need to wash my hair, like, instantly.
By chemicals, I mean, like, dyeing, stuff that, like, fries your hair. Hairspray is a chemical, yes, but you wash it off and it's gone. But when you, like, if you strip your hair or you bleach it, like, that's damaging to your hair.
Well, yeah, but even for girls who don't, like, I still feel like they don't. And also depends, too, because, like, a lot of this we're basing it off of, like, it depends on who we're basing it off of, you know, what type of hair they have, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm instantly thinking of, like, YouTubers that I watch that are, like, white, and they might have, like, blonde hair, or, you know what I mean? They just have hair that's, like, that's not the same as ours.
But also, like, it's going to be very relative to their hair type.
Yeah, that's so what I'm saying.
Right. No, I know, but, for example, it's the same thing, like, with skin. There's a lot of girls who can, like, sleep with makeup on or, like, barely do anything to their face, and their face never really gets, like, they're not acne prone. They don't have sensitive skin. And there's girls that, like, if they just wear makeup for, like, an hour, they're already breaking out or they get texture on their skin. And so those girls, are going to do more to their face and take care of it and more maintenance, which is kind of, I guess, my situation with my scalp. And not necessarily my hair, it's my scalp. And that's another thing, too, is I think we focus on hair care and not scalp care. And there's a difference between the two. That's something I was became more aware of. But anyways.
Yeah. I need to work on mine more, too, honestly. I mean, in terms of, like, I'm trying not to with the cap. Because at first, like, I remember you recommended it to me a while ago. And I was like, no, I have to have the cap. Like, it feels so uncomfortable. And you know what? I didn't like the exact same way.
But and now I can't wear it.
Yeah, no, now for me, I'm like, you know what, like, I mean, I can do either or, but it's just, yeah, no, I prefer, like, if it's chiffon, I'll have to, obviously, and I have been wearing a lot of chiffon recently, but, like, if it's a crinkle hijab, I think for me, just out of, like, laziness, I'm like, I'll just be like, let me put it on real quick, and then.
I want to talk about, this just kind of came to mind, because I thought, what would be something that would be interesting that we could talk about that maybe could be relatable to other people, and that's sibling relationships in terms of, like, two sisters, especially because we are the youngest in the family. We are 7 years apart and we live together, obviously the longest than everyone else because we still live together. It is not easy to maintain a relationship with a sibling.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Why are you laughing? No, I'm being serious.
No, I'm think like that she's the relationship me right
no,
now.
No, the relationship that you and I have on like, her podcast. I brought her here so I could lay it down. I have my grievances with you.
Give me my blazer back.
My black blazer back. No. She doesn't. Do you have my blazer?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. No, I'm no,
you have was... my you have my jacket for a while though.
Anyways, I think that part of, and our relationship is not perfect by any means. I think once in a while we'll argue and be annoyed by each other, but I think that we've come such a long way over the years. And I think it's because you have to put effort.
Being kids to being adults. Kids, teens, kids, adults. Kids,
as in when I was out with my friends or on dance floors, Hannah would randomly appear and scare the shit out of me because I would be dancing and I would just look and I'd see this curly haired girl like just standing there and I'm like, Hannah, what are you doing? Like, go with the little kids. And she'd be like, no, she was attached. You were attached
to
me. Yeah,
I remember that? I remember like I would have like, like your friends, younger sisters that would also be my friends, but like if I would not go up to them, like,
yeah, you were so attached to me. And it was just so awkward because I literally didn't even have to take care of you. I just knew you were going to be there. I'd go sit, like we'd get grab cake or something. And then I, next thing you know, I just know she's standing right there next to my chair. It was so cute though. And then I think we had the hardest time when you were in high school.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. Yeah.
I think that's because that's when you started gaining more independence and like, we're more pushing back.
Hard.
They are hard. And I was like, I think what was hard for me was I was still like a young adult, but yeah, I had to take on this large responsibility of kind of raising you because at that point no one was left at home. Mm-hmm. It was just me. And you know, my parents are immigrants and they're amazing parents, but they couldn't help you at, you know,
just certain with your things, academics, like, yeah.
And also like things that you were dealing with at school and just, you were going through a lot when you were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to take part in that. And I was taking you to like all your doctor's appointments and like just everything. And it, I think it.
Oh, yeah, because I was anemic at that time. And yeah. That's, and also and that affected my mood.
Yeah.
Like, I remember because you kept talking to me and you were like, are you being bullied?
It wasn't
was
even
like,
just,
no,
it wasn't just even anemic. It was, there was something. I don't remember what it's called, but remember you had
I had
to,
strep
like,
throat. No, that what? Was that, I remember that.
No, dude, chill. Strep throat is like something that comes and goes, but you had that like specific type of anemia.
Oh, did I?
Going to a blood specialist. Yes, remember that doctor would come from LA?
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, yeah.
See, what even mom's sister here? Though? I remember. It was just like it was.
They just gave me regular iron pills, so I don't know. I thought that it was just regular.
Yeah, you also had to see a dietitian. And you had to go to the CBCC center, which was a cancer center regularly. It was a cancer. So it was like really weird. And I would have to take you to those appointments.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being 18, having to carry a note with me all the time that was from my parents saying that they gave me permission to take you to these appointments and that I was able to like sit in with you because they never were able to attend take you.
It was probably called HIPAA. No, I learned it because I had a coworker.
No, I know what
HIPAA she's a nurse
is,
now,
but anyways, yeah, it took a lot. It was a lot on me. Like I had to grow up really fast at that time. But my personality has always been very responsible, I guess you could say. So it wasn't hard. I mean, it was hard. But what was hard is like, how do you convince someone who's not your kid, who's growing up and becoming independent, to open up and be okay with someone being so much in their space, you know?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I was your sibling. I wasn't your mom. I wasn't.
Well, I think you also had to learn, like, to give me space, too. Because I remember there were times where we would argue.
I smothered you.
And, yeah, I remember I would literally be like, I'm leaving. Like, I would just go to my room and I'd be like, no, I'm not having this conversation right now. And then you would, like, come in.
Communication, Hannah. We need to talk about this.
And I just, like, not today. And then, you know. And
those were bad.
Now it's, yeah. Now it's better, though. Because, like,
but that
we'll know.
But, yeah, no, I realized that was bad on my part. The thing is, I think, with anyone, like, it kind of almost reminds me of, like, a marriage where when you start living with someone, you start seeing how they handle, let's say, confrontation or arguments or a stressful situation or conversation. Sometimes one person needs to take a break, even if the other person still wants to talk about it. You have to give the other person a break and let them, and, like, give them that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we had to learn. And I feel like we communicate better now when we do disagree on things. And sometimes it's like really stupid things, but when we do disagree upon it, it like lasts for that moment and then it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I understand, like, and you understand what we have to do to basically get over it. And like, we pick our fights and we don't, mm-hmm. we don't let every little thing bother us.
Yeah. I think another big thing with like sibling fights or whatever is not to get other people involved.
That's
like,
true.
That's we one never, thing. Yeah. That's not why my dad is
always
thinks
he's always like, you guys never fight. You guys are good. I'm like, you just don't see it.
Yeah, no. Because I think, you know, and one, I feel like that's, you know, when you're fighting with your sibling, it's like it's you versus them, like, battle. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. when we're fighting, it's me and you, like, battling it out.
Yeah.
When one of us, you know what I mean? But, like, when one of us bring in either one of our parents of all, or another sibling. Yeah, and don't bring my mom into it. She is, like, trying to keep the peace, but
she doesn't know how to do it.
No.
She starts yelling at me because
she'll yell at both of us.
No. Because I'm not one to cry, per se.
Okay, here's the thing, though. And I Hannah's- cry, but I'm like, no, just keep going. Keep going. I'm like, let's keep it going.
The thing is I've gotten used to seeing you cry and keeping it going.
Yeah.
Which I always tell you, like, this sucks because you start crying and you make everyone feel like shit. Because, like, halas, you win the argument because you start crying and it's sad. But when my mom sees that, my mom does not like seeing, you know, us cry. So she immediately will just, she'll, like, attack me because she'll be like, what did you do to make her cry? I'm like, nothing. Like, yeah. I'm just expressing my feelings. And sometimes it's because you feel bad about something.
And sometimes it's just like, I don't know how to express myself. And for me, that's really frustrating when it's like, I don't have the ability to. So for me, I don't know. I think, like, I know, like, some of our siblings, like, some of us are just more likely to cry than others. Like, that's just, I feel like, how we are.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing about siblings. I always wonder, like, how that is determined. Because they always say, like, the baby is the one that's, like, the most sensitive. I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think part of it is because of the way that, like,
and the middle children are, like, the most resilient because they've just had to, like, figure things out. I'm not necessarily the middle child in terms of where I land in the sequence of, like, how we were born. But I think I'm the middle child in the sense of, like, everyone is either, like, everyone older than me has been married for many years, has kids. Like, they all share a commonality in that. And then there's you, who was, like, young and still in college or in high school. And then there was me, like, in the middle, like, in her mid-20s. Not married, done with school. But I always feel like I was, I don't know, I always felt like I was kind of in the middle.
Well, yeah, because, like, you, again, like I said, you had a sibling who was the baby. Like, I feel like hypothetically, if I didn't exist, it's like, you know, meta, you got really excited.
No, I was just thinking about how much I wish for a younger sibling. And I remember, I'm trying to think of how nice my life would be right now if I was an only child. I would feel like an only child, basically.
Yeah, you would, right? Or, I would, like, imagine if I was, like, a boy and, like, you had
Girl,
a brother
if
instead.
If you were a boy, we'd be traveling the world.
We would.
I would not be like, here no. right now.
Yeah, that
but, like, I got my
be
younger
better.
Brother. Peace out. Damn it, Hannah.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people think that, but then I've talked to girls where they have younger brothers, and then they'll say, you know, my younger brother
you
doesn't want to go anywhere.
You couldn't grab that Y chromosome.
Just on my way out.
Yeah. You could have.
That's not how biology works.
You know, I didn't study any hard sciences. But
natural sciences. Don't say hard sciences.
Because what? Behavioral science is not a soft science?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's a behavioral science or social science, but then natural sciences, like natural.
Why isn't behavioral natural?
We're by nurture.
Okay. She got a degree now, so she's flexing. Smarter than me, flexing her knowledge. But no, at the same time, too, I think you just have to be realistic of how things are. But I think the older you get, the more relaxed I am, because I'm just like, you have your own life and
yeah,
you're
going to
be making
thing.
Your own decisions.
As soon as I turned 18, I think a lot of things got easier for us, because part of it was because I like the fact that you would kind of just tell me you're an adult now. Like, I can tell when you disapprove of things, but you would just be like, you're an adult now. And obviously, you know, it wouldn't be like big things.
Okay, so we just took a little break. How little was it?
A few days.
And now we're back. So I want to do this segment. I want to call it maybe Twitter Talks, but
ooh,
one
like
thing,
that.
Thanks. Put a lot of thought into it. A
few days.
A few days thoughts into it. Yeah, exactly. But I just feel like Twitter has great content mm-hmm. For different
types of things, like whether
a lot of frustrating and, content too.
Yeah, so there's controversial things. Obviously, there's like political things. There's funny things. I feel like Twitter is a very funny place as well. Mm-hmm. So I thought what we could do, since you and I always DM each other tweets anyway, is I'd invite you to like maybe share a tweet, or I could share a tweet, and then we can talk about it.
Yes.
So do you have something you want to, or do you want me to go first?
Yes. Actually, I just thought of another one that I saw, but that's a whole other topic. And we I saw a time, whole debate so. About like meher prices.
Oh God.
That's
a good one though.
That is, that could be just a whole topic on its own. But this one that I saw, do I name the person? I'm just going to name the person.
Yeah, you can.
It's called Stolen Person. His at is Queer Socialism. And this was the tweet. It was, correcting a non-white person's spelling or grammar is racist. I almost said racist. Okay, so correcting a non-white person's spelling or grammar is racist. Jot that down.
And so, what is the reaction people are getting?
So, I mean, it has a pretty significant amount of likes, but this person, I think, has, yeah, they have like 24.8K followers. But a lot of the comments, like a lot of them are hidden and stuff like that. But it's about like questions. Oh, I just see even more comments. But a lot of it was like backlash. I actually saw it from
people disagreed.
Yeah, I saw it from someone else who retweeted it where they were just like, this is like so dumb and stuff like that.
So what's your opinion on it?
I think it depends in the context. I guess that's everything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that I interpreted this was like in terms of like dialects and like, what is it, like vernacular systems, basically, like, I don't know, like if you think about the way that certain people talk and depending on where they're from or something like that, like I think if you write that out that way, like it's fine, and if anything it's more correct,
like
than
y'all or ain't.
Yeah,
like those were never technically words, but now they've kind of become words.
Yeah, and like I'm pretty sure, like, you know, there are just some things where it's like if you write it down like on Microsoft Word, you know, everything goes off where it's like this is wrong. Mm-hmm. But you kind of just ignore it anyway, and you keep on writing because you know, and whoever your intended reader is, they know what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. And most people probably wouldn't even know that it's not grammatically correct.
What do you mean?
Like, there's certain things that Word tells you it's not grammatically correct, but if you were to read it without the indication that there's, like, a squiggly line under it,
oh,
or whatever,
yeah,
you would just assume it was fine.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's that, but then, and then there's some, I think some universal type of things, like y'all, I think pretty much everyone now is kind of saying it, mm-hmm, or even if they're not saying it, they're familiar with it, they know what it means.
But is it grammatically correct when it's Y apostrophe A-L, because it's like you all condensed?
Maybe it is. I don't know. You know, I just took like a linguistics class and I don't remember. We talked about it, but like I know, I mean, I guess we'll have to type it out to see. But for me, I guess what I was thinking when this person meant non-white, basically, like people of color, spelling, like, correcting their grammar. For me, I thought of it in a way where it's like, I don't know, I guess where someone says something under a certain slang or under a certain, you know, community, and it's like when you say it or pronounce it that way.
So basically, like, if you're an uncultured swine, then
what?
You've never heard that?
I've heard of that phrase. But
yeah,
what do you mean,
well,
like,
basically saying if you're correcting people because you don't understand like their like cultural jargon or like the way that they say things, or maybe,
yeah,
they have an accent. But I lean more towards, I think you see that how people, you see it in a certain type of context, but I think that's such a small percentage and such a...
What do you mean, small percentage?
Well, again, you're the one who studied this stuff, so maybe I don't know. But when I read that, I kind of more lean on towards the, like, yeah, it's kind of stupid to say that, mm-hmm, correcting someone's grammar is... Because English language, at the end of the day, has grammar. So if you're correcting it based off of the English language that we predominantly use, then they're just correcting the grammar. First of all, correcting people's grammar is annoying in general. It doesn't matter what color you
are. Yeah, I do think it's annoying,
obviously,
in general.
But I'm saying, like, to call it racist, I think that's just, like, a kind of blanket statement.
Well, see, okay, well, that's the other thing. The reason why I agree with it to an extent is because, I guess, like, when I took a sociolinguistics class, this is probably so boring to people. Oh, my God, I'm just realizing that now. Anyway, when I took a sociolinguistics class, for me, it was very interesting because we learned about different societies and different dialects and how, like, different communities, you know, speak a certain way. Like, we were just talking about, you know, how, like, my mom and her mom have, like, different dialects.
Yeah, Adabi. Because they grew up in different areas.
Yeah. So, you know, pretty much with every language, that's how it is. And for me, the way that I took it was that, so what we learned in that class is that, you know, you might grow up with a certain dialect that's not the standard English dialect. So, you know, either, like, a heavy Southern accent or, I don't know, like, a heavy New York accent or something. And then if you go somewhere where everyone else speaks the standard dialect and you're trying to, like, get a job or something, they say if you interview and you're not professional in that sense, that can hinder you. Or things like, I mean, not just interview. I feel like that's very, and I guess it depends. Like, I think wording, obviously, you mm-hmm. can't say certain words, obviously, when you're in an interview. But I think the way that you say it, I think, like, there's been studies showing that, like, people are discriminated by their language.
Well, like, so I work that's... in agriculture, and so there, I think that sometimes there could be a stigma towards people who have, like, a country twang that they're, like, uneducated, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which is not the case, because that's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Or at least, in you know, whether they're educated or not in terms of, like, having a diploma, but a lot of them have the work experience and, like, the knowledge of the industry or whatever area that they're, or field that they're in. But people do assume that that is... that you're somehow, like, kind of, like, a, you know, that you're just uneducated.
Yeah, or sometimes I feel like people who, like, maybe English isn't their first language, and that goes into something else, so but you know what I mean.
Like, racist. I think maybe you're discriminating against someone if they're an immigrant or, like, because you can discriminate. You can discriminate. I can't say the word.
Discriminate?
No, sorry. I'm tired. You can discriminate against someone who's white who has, you know, like, a Southern twang. Who's very country, so I think you can discriminate against anyone. But I think it's just...
Well, I think it can hit racism on certain points. Like, depending on the context. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying it doesn't. It does. But I think to say such a blanket statement, like, don't correct non-whites' grammar because it's racist, like, that's like saying, like, no, like, that's telling people you cannot correct... If anything, there's a lot of brown people or people of color that are probably learning the language, so maybe they want their grammar to be corrected, or maybe they
corrected. In a school setting, like, if you're learning... standard
can
English, but I think if you're
grammar verbally, I thought grammar was just in writing. Is that, does it even exist in verbiage? To me, grammar is like writing.
I'm pretty sure it does. I'm pretty sure, but honestly, I don't know.
That's, I've never heard anyone say, like, your verbal, I feel like, grammar.
I feel like when you speak, though, that's sometimes it's so fast and it's, I don't know. I feel like, but, you know, when you're face-to-face with someone, or when you're speaking, like, I feel like you're less likely to correct them, or maybe you're less likely to notice it. Whoops. To notice it. But for me, like, I feel like when it's written, it's so easy, because sometimes, like, you can read it over and over again, and it's, like...
Well, because it's also a lot more, not going to say detailed, but we know exactly what, like, you're more likely to spot a comma missing in a sentence than, a, like, someone not taking the proper pause at a certain point of a sentence to, you know... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a comma is supposed to create a pause, but sometimes you might not have that pause when you're speaking, or maybe you do because it's natural. I don't know.
Yeah.
But interesting.
I don't know. For me, I don't know. I thought that, I understand, like, the whole, I think a lot of people misinterpreted it, but I guess for me.
No, it's an interesting perspective. I would have never thought of it in that perspective.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess for me, just in terms of, like, again, what I went to when I thought of it was, like, the African-American vernacular system. So, like, kind of, and I learned about that, like, instead of saying, like, he is happy, sometimes people say, like, he be happy, and those are two different things. So, like, that, or, again, like, just when you're speaking with
a certain... So, in an educational setting, you would be able to correct that?
If the educational purpose was language-based, if it was, like, let's say, writing a paper... then yes, I think that's fine. But I think what, if it's in terms of communication-based?
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. Even actually when writing a paper, it depends on what paper you write. Because there are some where, again, that's completely fine, I think, the way that it depends on what context, you know what I mean? When you're writing a paper and when you're saying something in a certain way.
That's interesting.
You disagree? No, come on.
It's not that I disagree. I don't think I have enough knowledge to... speak on it, but just from my understanding, like, just we've always, you know, we're taught a certain way to speak and to write according to, like, what the English literature guidelines and rules are, and I feel like when you sit there and you let, like, to me, I if I was in a teacher in a classroom, which I'm not, and I don't have credentials or anything, but if a student said that, I would say, no, the proper way of saying it is he is happy, not he be happy.
Well, that's the other thing, though. Like, well, again, it depends on what context they're trying to...
If they're saying it, if they're writing it, I would just
tell them. Not that. I mean, context isn't, like, what they're trying to... Like, what are they trying to... What message are they trying to convey?
What's the different message that they would convey other than someone's happy?
So, he is happy is, like, you're just happy at the moment. He be happy is, like, a state of being. That's what my professor, she taught me the difference. Mm. She was like, that's the two differences.
No, that's interesting.
I mean, so, like, you know what I mean? So, it's different. You know what I mean? Like, and if you, I've heard of that before, like, I mean, not necessarily he be happy, but, like, you know, the be part. Mm-hmm. And, like, you hear that. And, like, when I thought about it, I'm like, oh, that actually makes sense when you think about
it. It's kind of like when they say, like, I be humble. Like, yeah. I be grinding. I be, you know, like.
Yeah, it's like a state of, you know what I mean? Like, I being. Guess like a. Like, a certain phase, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I've always been interested in linguistics, but not... I feel like you're focused on English language and the different nuances and dialects and all that stuff, whereas I'm more interested in how words translate over between languages. So, like, obviously I'm fluent in Arabic, English, and then I'm pretty good at Spanish. And so I see the similarities in which Arabic and Spanish... the similarities Arabic and Spanish has, even in terms of, like, the way that we align, like, our adjectives and mm-hmm. our nouns and our verbs and stuff like that. And it's very different than English. But just understanding, like, why certain parts of the world, you know, have an adjective before their noun or vice versa. And mm-hmm. Just the way that we can say a sentence, and in Arabic it could be, like, in one word. It encompasses what the sentence is in English mm-hmm. or something. That's always interested me, and I actually wanted to study linguistics when I was at school. But the department was so small, so I knew I wasn't going to get much out of it. But I wanted to because I always, like, in my mind, I always broke apart, like, how my mind bounces between the two and understands, yet they're very different. Like, the structure, mm-hmm. obviously not very different, but the structure has differences. And then when I obviously became more proficient or, like, better at Spanish, and then seeing the similarities, still the differences between Arabic, but then the similarities between the two and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, so for me, I feel like it's because I'm not as confident. Like, I feel like I'm very confident, alhamdulillah, with the English language, but I feel like with the Arabic, I always feel like I can improve on. With Spanish, I learned it, but then I completely forgot it. So
you have to use
it. I can't even. What do you mean?
Like, if you don't use the language, you're not going to keep
it. Yeah, you do. So, for me, I feel like with Arabic, I've been able to retain a certain amount just through, like, my religion and through, like, my family. You know what I mean? And, like, yeah, like being raised in a community. Yeah. But other than that, I feel like I don't feel the same level of confidence that I do with English.
I as much as I'm really good at Arabic, I think what mixes me up is all the dialects and the versions of Arabic that I'm exposed to.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes it very complicated in my brain to figure out which words I'm gonna say, because it sounds really silly when you jump from, like, my Yemeni dialect to another Yemeni dialect to a Khaliji dialect to, you know, a Shami, like, Palestini dialect that mm-hmm. I pick up from, like, my brother-in-law, my nieces, and my sister now, who predominantly has, like, a weird dialect as well too. But it's just, there's so many. So, like, I want to do an episode. I'm planning, inshallah, on recording it with someone who is Saudi Arabian, and I think she predominantly speaks Arabic, although she's fluent in English. But I know she's going to speak Arabic because I notice in everything that I see her speak on, she mixes, you know, she brings both languages in. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it, I feel like I immediately do that too, subconsciously, just switch between the languages. But then I'm like, I don't want to hear my voice when I speak Arabic, because I'm so much more confident in English than I am in Arabic. And I wish that, like, my dream is to go live in an Arab country for a while just so that I can practice my Arabic and be more, because, like, I'm very fluent in it, and I can get by, and I'm fluent at writing and everything, but I want to be consistent with my wording. Like, I want it to be as close to Fusha or as close to, like, a general dialect that most people can understand and not so, like,
yeah.
Yemeni.
If I could, I would actually love to get, like, an Arabic degree, like, in the Arabic language. Kind of like how I did with English, where it focuses a lot on, the language and literature.
So, I studied the Arabic language pretty much my whole life, since I was young in the Arabic school, and then all the years I was in Yemen. And when I came back, up until I was in college, I studied the Arabic language, and I studied specifically tajweed, which is like the way that you read the Quran, and there's like a lot of rules into it, and like I still now when I read, it's like embedded in me, like you, once you learn it, you almost can't read the Quran the same way. So like there's certain ways that you have to enunciate words, so certain letters, so you learn about the origin. Now we're getting into like the Arabic linguistics part, but you learn about the origin of the letter, where it comes from. And so some of them, they start at the tip of your, or I guess your lips, and then the tip of your tongue all the way down to your throat. And then we have
yeah, I remember, isn't there like a chart? I could have sworn I remember. Yeah.
And then I think they're called damn, I might butcher this, but it's like haruf al
You know something? What? Actually, in my linguistics class, I think there was a similar chart where, or at least there was a way where we learned different letters that, like, or we learned sounds, because I guess, like, there's this international, like, set of letters, and it's, like, it's pretty much, it can be applied to any language, but it's every single sound that a human can, like, make. And there are some where it, like, nobody could pronounce in English, but then, like, as she would pronounce it, I'm like, wait, I'm like, that sounds like an Arabic letter, and I'll be like, wait. And then there's some where it was, like, obviously, you know, something that could be pronounced in Spanish, but not Arabic or English, or...
Yeah, it's interesting, and then, you know, the way that the words mix, and so, for example, we have, like, in the English language, like, S and H, you know, together, that makes sh, right? So, like, it would be similar, it's similar, but not at the same time. It's just how you, and it's between words, it's how you would blend the last letter that would have, like, for example, there's ahkam nun sakina, so there's a silent noon, and so you have to figure out how that blends in with the next letter, if that makes sense. Okay, so since I'm obsessed with Twitter, and so are you and probably everyone else, I think what I want to do is set up some type of, like, Twitter talk.
Twitter talks.
Damn, I'm gonna have to edit that out.
That's gonna be in the background of like a chat instead of your usual like music intro in the
beginning.
Yeah.
Don't make me. I will use it.
Please don't.
I think it would be interesting because there's so many. To me, Twitter is just open. It opens topics and people are just. They're just. It's just a different type of vibe there. So I think it'd be interesting if we did once a week, since we are neighbors. Our rooms are right next door to each other, and roommates. Then we'll just have discussion. We're not roommates. Oh, roommates.
I said roommates. Oh, no. Roommates too. I mean, we're not twins. We share
the same womb, though. Anyways.
Okay. Okay. Do I sign off? Goodbye. Do I say goodbye?
Oh, you want to do the... Yeah, you can do the ending. You can tell them where to find me and all that stuff.
You can find Noor at This Muslim Girl Podcast on Instagram, Twitter. Do you have Facebook?
I do, but I'm not active because I don't have my personal Facebook.
Okay, then yeah. So I guess not her Facebook page. What's your website or blog?
This Muslim Girl.
This Muslim Girl.
Which I don't really update either.
She does not update that either.
Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, Twitter and Instagram, This Muslim Girl Podcast. Should I plug myself? No, I'm just kidding. No.
Okay, don't follow her.
No. Okay,
that's all. Thank you.
I'm the only one who likes her tweets, so. I'm kidding.
Ow.